Welcome to the Bicycle Media Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the health of the cycling industry.
Not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride.
Try and really focus and make sure the rider has a great experience.
There's a couple of things about building a custom bike.
What these e-bikes can do.
The customer just wouldn't take no for an answer kind of thing.
So I think in a way we're in a sweet spot where we don't have all this stuff tying us down.
We just discussed about making the cycling industry more welcoming for women.
The bike mechanic was right there on the floor.
Something that Weir has really done well in the last couple of years is driven by rock and roll.
It's quite hard for them to train when they don't know what they're training for.
Since again, we believe that our bodies are very smart.
We definitely tend to look forward a lot more.
I started to demystify things.
But if you don't have the right staff, that's game over.
You're not selling at that point, you're educating.
Our intent is to educate both motorists and cyclists.
Big thanks to our coffee sponsors, Roasty, for all their support for the podcast. Make sure and check them out at roasty.ca. They've been delivering coffee to Edmontonians and deliver across Canada for orders over $40. Check them out. Big thanks, guys, as always. Welcome back, folks. Man, I'm pumped for this episode big time, and I'll tell you why. It starts off with the co-founder of State Bicycle Company, Mehdi Farsi, and we talked a little bit about what was going on with Reveal, the global media conference for the outdoor industry. They were launching a gravel product, and we were really pumped about it. So we nerded out a little bit about group set and the sweeping handlebars. And then we talked a little bit about the DNA of the company, as well as their concept stores. They really thrive on that sub $1,000 bike, and they've always stuck to their roots. They do what they want to do, however they want to do it. And that's really important. There's a common theme in the podcast. But that theme of doing things just how you want to do it, no matter what, is all a part of the second half of this podcast. Because I introduce a new segment to the podcast called Around the Board Talking Bikes. And while on a bike ride, funny enough, I thought of this idea of interviewing my favorite musicians and producers and talking about the bikes that they ride, as well as a composition, as if we were sitting around a Neve console with all that money warmth that comes from those Neve consoles. So we're going to talk to Jordan Ruiz, who's by far one of my favorite songwriters and producers. He's based in L.A. We're going to talk about a track from his 2016 album called States, and the track is called Montana. I have never been to Montana. And we'll find out if he has too, but he references cycling quite a bit as a kid, you know, riding out with his friends on the weekends, and he also rides a State bicycle, which is kind of how I heard about the brand. So we're going to talk music, we're going to talk cycling. Please stick around for that segment. It's super cool, and I was very honored to interview Jordan. So without further ado, here is Mehdi Farsi of the State Bicycle Company. Mehdi, so sorry for a bit of the delay, sir. How are you doing today? Thanks for being my guest this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Excellent. Well, we'll dive a little bit into the stuff that you did earlier in the week with Reveal. But can you give our listeners a little bit of a background on yourself and the State Bicycle Company?
Yeah. So my company, State Bicycle Company, we're based in Tempe, Arizona, right outside of Phoenix. We've been in business for just about 10 years, just a little over 10 years selling bikes. It was started by myself and my brother, who's the other co-founder, in 2009, started selling bikes in 2010. And we started this company when we were fresh out of college, when we were in our early 20s. So definitely have grown and matured a lot as riders, a lot as business people, and just a lot as people in general over the last 10 years and gained a lot of experience. Our business really, really focuses on the sub $1,000 price point bike. We find that many people who buy our bikes don't necessarily self-identify as cyclists, as maybe a lot of your listeners do. However, once they get a bike, they can realize how fun cycling can be. So our goal is really to make cycling an activity, a sport that we love, as accessible, as affordable, and really as attractive to the layperson, so that we can just get more people out on bikes and on the road.
Do you think that, you know, being so young, fresh out of college and maybe not, you know, seasoned sort of bike industry people helped you make the bike brand that's sort of for everybody?
Yeah, I think so. I think both myself and my brother have a pretty unique perspective on things. So as you mentioned, you know, we weren't necessarily industry veterans, not even by a long shot. When we first started the company, prior to that, we were involved in starting several other online businesses, ranging from, you know, selling t-shirts online to selling furniture. But both of us had grown up cycling fans. So some of our favorite memories as kids were, you know, sitting down watching the grand tours, whether it be on TV during the summer with our dad, or even during kind of Lance Armstrong's heyday, being in France for the final stage of the Tour de France several summers in a row and absorbing that experience. So cycling was really something that was a part of our lives. Neither of us were necessarily, you know, category racers or even junior racers. And it wasn't really until college and after college we started to get into bikes. And one of those reasons were fixed gear bikes. You know, they were affordable. They were bikes that are very easy to work on compared to, you know, your traditional road bikes, and relatively inexpensive and clean. And the types of people who were riding those bikes were a lot closer to our age when we were, you know, 22, 23 than people who were my dad's age riding road bikes. So that was kind of our entrance into cycling. And for many of our customers, that's their entrance into cycling. And, you know, some people stay there and they have a cool fixed gear, or they have a good city bike and they use it on the weekends or to get to their job or to get around campus. And that's great. And some people, that's just the beginning, and then they grow and they evolve and their preferences changes and they just add more and more bikes. So, that's kind of my history with the bike. And, you know, one of the reasons I think it is so important to get people's, foot in the door with a fun bike, so that they can then take on their own adventure.
I found out about you guys through my favorite musician and producer, Jordan Ruse, and he had posted that he was going for a ride, and his creativity is almost second to none with how incredible he is at Soundscape. You know, your social media, your Instagram is over 100,000 followers. Are there a lot of pretty cool people riding those very unique, one-of-a-kind bikes? And how does that make you feel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our customer base is pretty robust, and it ranges from, you know, just there's so many awesome, talented, interesting people, whether it's, you know, well-known people like Jordan, or, you know, even just individuals that you might not know, that but they're, you know, really talented photographers, designers, people that have their own small businesses. It's really awesome to kind of meet and hear as many customer stories as I can possibly absorb. I'm on our Instagram all the time, interacting with customers and seeing where they're riding and where they're going. And it's really inspiring, and it makes me feel really good inside knowing that they're using our product, what we created, to essentially go out and explore the world and have a good time. And that's really special to us. So it's great. I don't ever take it for granted that people are out using our product. Here in Tempe, when I'm around town, I obviously see our bikes quite a bit on the street. But, you know, if I'm traveling and, you know, I see one of our bikes either locked up somewhere, I see a rider ride by and I'm in a different city or in a different state, I still like sometimes can't believe it. And I know that we're selling bikes, obviously, all over the world. I'm aware that they're being shipped everywhere imaginable, but still, like, seeing it in person go by when I'm, especially when I'm not in town, that's really exciting. I like, once in a while will like stop someone and talk to them about their bike, but like I don't want to be weird about it.
Can you talk a little bit about what you released or discussed in this Zoom sort of digital trade show, in a well, this conference, and how that might open up new riders or new audiences?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that we had the opportunity to discuss a wide array of things, but you know, given the circumstance and given the fact that we have this product release coming up so soon, we took the opportunity to discuss our 4130 gravel bike, which we're calling the 4130 all road bike. So I mentioned earlier, we've been doing this for 10 years. We've evolved as a company. We've evolved as riders. And since day one, State Bicycle has really been taste driven by, you know, myself and my brother as riders, our sponsored riders and our peer group and our employees, where our tastes and our interests and our likes very much drive the type of product we make. We never want to put out something that we wouldn't ride ourselves. And kind of the flip side of that is we make product that we want and we want in the world. And, you know, if something doesn't exist, we try to conceptualize it and make it. And that's where we're at with the 4130 road. So using our existing lines, our 4130 is our best-selling steel line of bikes, obviously named after 4130 chromoly steel. We started out with the fixed gear single speed version of that, and that was actually the very first bike we ever made as a company, and that's been with us for 10 years. Last year we released the 4130 road bike, which was a really fun release. It was a down tube shifting, kind of a callback to like 80s, early 90s race bikes, but it did have some modern features to make finding parts, replacement parts, and upgrading your bike really easy. And that bike did great for us. And it showed that our riders want that look and feel of a state bicycle. They love the brand, but sometimes they want more than just a single speed bike. So that kind of led now to the 4130 all road bike, which is our first gravel geared bike release. And this is the product that I've spent the most time on conceptualizing, testing, designing since I've been with the company. It's one of the most excited releases I have had the opportunity to work on. And I'm looking at it right now in my office, by the way. Yeah, we're really excited. It's going to come out in mid-May. And one of the reasons I really like it is because it is going to be open up the door to off-road riding to so many riders who maybe were priced out of it or just didn't have the right bike for their needs. So this is a bike that's going to retail for about $800. We wanted to make it a Swiss Army knife of bikes. So whether you're commuting, it's your work bike and you're a messenger, whether you are riding bike paths or trails, road riding, whatever it may be, this bike can handle it. So it's going to come stock with a rider selection of either 700 wheels or 650 wheels. Users will be able to choose their wheel set at time of purchase, no additional charge for either option. But really the very exciting thing is we're going to give people the opportunity to purchase both at checkout. So, you know, for $350 more, you'll be able to get the bike shipped with a second wheel set. And that wheel set will have tires, tubes, cassette, rotor, through axles, everything you need. So if you wanted to maybe go from a more of an off-road setting to a more on-road setting or vice versa, it's as simple as a, you know, 2 or 3 minute swap your wheels out and you're getting two two bikes in one, essentially. I didn't mention the fact that with those sizes, we kind of curated the tire choice too, to kind of give a different ride. So for this particular build, we're using Panaracer Gravel Kings. I mean, they're great tubeless ready tires. We're using the SK model on the 650 wheels, which has a knobby tread. Again, definitely more appropriate for off-road use. And we're using just the standard Gravel Kings for the 700 wheel with a 38 tire. So it's going to roll a lot faster on the road. And being that many of our users are going to be first-time gravel riders, we wanted to kind of curate that for them. Obviously, you can change out your tires and that's preference, but we felt that having those two very distinct options paired with those wheel sizes, it's going to make that bike even so much more versatile. It's going to give you two very distinct rides depending on your wheel choice. For the bar choice, we went back and forth with it quite a bit. So earlier prototypes actually did have like a mountain bike riser on it, believe it or not. And we were looking at 1x12 drivetrains. Ultimately, we felt that for an all-road bike, we wanted some kind of a drop. And what we were using on our own personal bikes were, you know, various additions of the flared out sweeping drop bar that you see like become more predominant on gravel bikes. So this particular bar is going to allow for mounting of front accessories, bike bags, etc. But also give you a lot of different gripping options in comfort over a longer ride. So we felt that this bike would be one that maybe bike packers and campers flock to as well. We do have an aluminum gravel bike coming about a month down the road from this one, where this one's going to release towards the end of May. The next one's going to release end of June. That's going to be an aluminum one. That one will be geared a little bit more to like performance racers, the people who are kind of doing dirty Kanza or, longer style gravel races. But this one we really felt was kind of more of a relaxed bike packing, camping type of vibe. Again, you can kind of see that in our fork selection. The standard fork is a steel acromoly fork. There are four mounting points on either blade, as well as rack mounts on eyelets on both sides of the dropouts on either side of the fork. So plenty of room for any type of accessory, whether it's racks, bags, extra bottle cages. It's really, really versatile. We will have upgrade options for carbon forks for people who maybe don't need all those mounting points or they want to shed some weight. There'll be what we call our carbon race fork, which will have less tire clearance and smooth blades for kind of a more clean aesthetic and a little bit lighter weight. We will also have what we're calling our carbon monster fork, which I believe is in those photos that you're looking at. And that one does actually have all the same mounting points. It's a little bit heavier than the race carbon fork, but it's significantly lighter than, the steel fork. And that one has really great tire clearance as well. I mean, the bike and that fork will both clear 2.3 or maybe even 2.4, depending on the brand of tire on the 650 wheel set. So you can almost get like a mountain bike feel out of this thing.
We'll just kind of move into something that I thought was really cool. And that was your concept stores. You have one location just down the road from Arizona State University. And the shop looks super cool from the photos. And I just wanted to talk about, the different you know, offerings that you added to it. I mean, obviously there's some cool skateboards and you do have, you know, some service and stuff like that. What was your approach and the look and feel that you wanted? Because I think, you know, going from bike building and putting together a really cool brand story is one thing, but retail experience is, it's not as easy as just saying, well, here's a blank slate. We've got, you know, 1500 square feet or 2500 square feet. Let's just open a bike shop to be successful, profitable. And I know we're currently, you know, closed, but what was the antithesis of that and how well has it been since you opened?
Yeah. So, yeah, the retail store was something that really was a great opportunity. We found a good space, really close to campus, really close to our headquarters. By no means are we kind of like brick and mortar experts. We do really well on our website, direct to consumer, and we do really well through our partner shops. So we work with, you know, a few hundred individually owned and operated bike shops throughout the country. And those are great stores. But for our hometown, we felt that it was important to have a place where our customers can go, look and touch and feel the bikes. Again, so many of our riders here are live here in Tempe and they need service. And so we opened up our shop, I want to say 2016, in Tempe. Prior to that, we did have a shop in Phoenix, but we essentially relocated it. And that shop is called State Ride Shop. So we want to be the one-stop shop, and specifically catered for Arizona State University students. We're so close to campus. And yeah, we do bikes there. Something that we don't do on our website, but we do exclusively in the shop is skateboards, just because that is in high demand, at the campus. So we also have skateboard selection there. We do apparel and then of course, service. So it's a great place for people to go see our product, interact with our employees and, you know, one-stop shop for anything state bicycle related. You know, customers can even order online, which is, you know, kind of what we're doing right now during this pandemic, order online and then pick up in person, if they want to as well. So it's a great outlet for us. And also it prevents people from showing up unannounced at our office, which was happening prior to having... opening up the shop. I mean, don't get me wrong. We love talking to our customers. We love seeing them, but having people come to our warehouse where we're kind of in our day-to-day to see bikes that are primarily in boxes is not really the best shopping experience for anyone. So, yeah, I think, you know, it just made sense. And we want it to be very much a reflection of who we are as a company. Basically, if you've been to our website or our social media channel, it's kind of like those aspects that have come to life there. And we want it to be really approachable. So there are really a lot of great retail shops out there. Unfortunately, in our industry, there are some that are, you know, not so great and not so welcoming and a little bit intimidating. So we want to have like a really inclusive shop to make everyone feel like they belong, and we want them to join us on bikes, not that we're kind of in some kind of exclusive club that they are maybe outsiders of.
How can people sort of stay in tune to what you guys are doing, follow you on social media, or end up getting themselves some of your cool bar end pipes and sort of stay connected to you guys?
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of the future, I think that, you know, we will always be trying to make very affordable bikes, but also bikes that are relevant and current into cycling. I like to think of us taking whatever trends that we're seeing in cycling, in the highest levels of the sport and what interests us. We try to boil those things down to the absolute essentials to make it affordable for everyone. So that's kind of our position. So we still have fixed gear bikes, but you know, gravel is really fun and exciting to us as riders right now. And so we're trying to strip it down to its key elements and get gravel bikes out to our customers, because that's what we're into right now and that's what we like. And you know, who knows what the future holds in terms of that. But yeah, your listeners can definitely keep up with everything we're doing. I mean, it feels like we're always moving a mile a minute here, and things are always changing and evolving, and we're always having fun partnerships and fun collaborations. So definitely our social media channels, Instagram seems to be the most frequented one right now, State Bicycle Co. They can follow us. Our website, statebicycle.com. If you have any overseas listeners in the UK and EU, we have European and British sites as well that service those customers. So those are all good. And if you are happen to be stuck home during the pandemic, and you know, you've already watched Tiger King and finished your whole Netflix watch list, our YouTube channel can definitely provide some entertainment. We have an awesome web series called Riding Fixed Up Mountains with Pros. I know it's a mouthful, but that's where we partner one of our fixed gear athletes with a pro rider, and we do exactly what the title says. We ride up a mountain on fixed gear bikes with no gears, and conduct a very candid, fun, lighthearted interview. So I definitely recommend watching those. I'm heavily involved in producing that series. It's a fun project for us, and we've talked to awesome riders, anyone from, you know, Justin Williams to Floyd Landis, to Bill Guyman. All the guests that we've had have been phenomenal. So we've done 11 episodes. So you have some watching material if you're so inclined.
Manny, thanks so much for being on the call. And it's a Friday afternoon, so hopefully down in sunny Arizona, you're going to have a cold one or whatever, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Appreciate it. Good to talk to you. Thank you.
This is the segment we call Around the Board, Talking Bikes.
Thanks for sticking around for this segment. I wanted to do something where I bridge the gap between music and cycling. Music can take you places and immerse you. The bike does just the same. So I wanted to just reach out to musicians, artists, producers that also ride bikes, and just talk about a piece of music that they've written and recorded, and then talk about the current bike that they're riding, or just cycling in general. My first guest, his music, his catalog of music, and some of his tracks I most adore, have been played more in the last 3 or 4 years than any piece of music I have got in my iTunes playlist in the last decade. Jordan Ruiz, he's a producer and an artist, and he produces more than he puts out as an artist as of late. But his record, 2016 record, States, it's absolutely incredible. And I wanted to just talk about the track Montana. It's got a lyric in there that's, "My lungs are full of smog and smoke. My hands, they long for rough and rope. Once through the West where cowboys roamed, they knew something I want to know." The vibe of this tune, and we'll hear it, it's got this sort of Elvin Jones triplet drum vibe. It doesn't overstate the recording. And Jordan's lyrics with this coupling of his sort of soft, airy vocal, it's awesome. And I love the track, and it does transcend you and take you as if you're riding gravel somewhere in Montana, and out of earshot is a guy casting a fly somewhere in a stream, and you can see the cattle and the hills. So really cool stuff, and I'll let him dive into it. But again, we're going to talk a little bit about the track, a little bit about the bike. In this case, he does ride a State bike. That's kind of how I heard about the brand. And in our conversation with Medi, we talk about cool people riding bikes, and that's kind of their jam and been their vibe for the past decade. So turn it over to Jordan here in the first installment of Around the Board Talking Bikes. Can you talk a little bit about the writing process for Montana as well as the recording process?
That whole record I did pretty much on my own. I mean, I had some people kind of guest on certain things. When I was writing, I remember, I think I just was down in Fullerton or something. I think I was staying at a friend's house for a day because we were going to play this little coffee shop show at night. And it was kind of at this turning point of me in L.A. When I wasn't really sure that I wanted to fully stay and commit and do music. And on the other end, I wasn't sure if I wanted to, you know, skip town and move somewhere, you know, kind of out west, even though I was as west as can be, you know. So I thought about, you know, finding my way out to some, you know, I don't know, little coffee shop in Bozeman or something like that and working there and trying to find like jobs in the area. And there was definitely this like fantasy idea for me of what Montana is. And it's even painted clearer in the fact that I've never been to Montana either. So it really, and I never have felt uncomfortable about that because it really truly is just a place that you're imagining. It is a fantasy, a paradise that, you know, and I think for me, I was a bit of an escapist, which I've always been, but especially at that time. And I think my escapism always grabs a different thing. And just at that time in my life, it was grabbing Montana.
I love the track Montana, and I want to dive into the recording process about it. I reached out to you about the I call it smooth as butter drum track. And I know there's some overdubs or just some filling of the percussion track, but you are a one man show in the regards of producing and mixing records. I know you have outsourced mastering, but what was the recording process like? And was it a lot of rehearsal? Like, how much leeway do you give your session musicians?
Honestly, I've never had a lot of rehearsal process in general, like moving into a session. There's not a ton of, unless there's a very specific vibe that calls for everyone to be kind of dialed into specific things. A lot of times it's just kind of a throw and go environment with me. Like, come in, I'll just have them play and then we'll dial into something. That one actually, is a little different. Well, even it's probably even faster because me and a buddy of mine went over to Aaron Sterling's house, who's a session drummer in LA, just like really amazing player, just in, you know, all the categories, his feel, his tone, the sounds he produces and the parts that he's writing. And so I remember it just being so interestingly easy for me because right as we got there, the first question in the room was like, okay, well, so how Born and Raised do we want this to be? Because he had just come off the Born and Raised tour, or he had just done the record, the John Mayer record, Born and Raised, very recently before that. And States is borrowing a lot of that kind of quintessential American Western sound. And I remember saying, like, okay, well, how close do we want this to be? He was like, well, just throw out that aesthetic for now, just kind of chase what you want in terms of part writing. Cause it could have been just that really straight, like 2 and 4, the whole groove long, you know, kind of just basically the last chorus is like that. It's just kick on one and snare on 2 and 4. And so it could have been that the whole time through, but it was interesting how he just flipped the whole groove on its head and just stuck his kicks on 2 and 4 and had this marching thing, which even felt much more appropriate after it happened, you know?
And it's a drum part that slowly evolves. It reminds me of a drum part in a Brad Meldow trio record, but it just evolves and evolves. And then when he opens up in the instrumental section, again, it doesn't overthrow the lyric. It doesn't overthrow the track. It's just so money. And do my ears hear a brushes on snare overdub as well? Like, is there some of that going on too?
This is kind of the beauty of Aaron Sterling. Nothing is off limits necessarily. Like, I think it was a tiny little, like an envelope with some random crap in it and like another piece of felt or cloth or something. And it's him tapping on those two little things. And I thought that was, I mean, it sounded great. As soon as he was like, oh, let me figure it out. And he has a big old bucket of percussion. He has so many percussion toys in that room. But yeah, he put all that stuff aside and he's like kind of just hitting stuff and playing around. That's kind of, I guess, the way his brain works. But then he came upon those things. It's like, all right, this is great. Just stuck a mic on it, recorded it. And that was like that, those two things, the snare kind of like, especially when you hear them at the end of the track, when everything is faded out and it's just that groove, that feels like just that kind of slow march west that feels so, I don't know, it felt so thematically on point, especially with that addition that you note, actually.
I got a burning question for you regarding a lyric in New Jersey, as we're still on that record. So is Blue and Green Side by Side, Summer Afternoon Ride, It's Getting Late, Where Did You Go? Is that a reference to cycling?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is, actually. That was a, it's funny that you catch up on that, because that was a huge piece of, that was a huge piece of my childhood when I had, you know, going from, obviously tricycle, and I moved out of training wheels way late, but I remember my first like blue bike, and my best friend had his green little cruiser. I think they're like Pacifics, and we just cruise around the neighborhood. I grew up on the East Coast in a small town in Jersey, and so we did a lot of kind of riding around, just aimless, like going to each other's houses. And like, you remember the days when you found out where your friends were by figuring out like where all the bikes were just kind of laying in the front yard.
Yes. Cycling is, of course, referenced in Jersey and in your bike rides. Do you write or at least think about your clients' artists' arrangements on your bicycle? And can you talk a little bit about what you're riding with the State Bicycle Company?
Yeah. So I'm riding a State Core line, the Rigby colorway, which I've affectionately named Eleanor.
Yeah. Nice.
And yeah, it's great. It's 24. It's just, I think, 700. And I ride it freewheel, not fixed, which I kind of prefer it that way, because I don't know if I can make this full jump into fixed, you know, but it's too scary for me. So,
yeah,
but I love it. Yeah. It's funny. I sent it to a buddy of mine. I sent a photo to a buddy of mine in New Zealand, and he was like, "Is that a fucking gel seat?" And I was like, "I do what I want, man. I'll do it. I don't care."
Yeah, we're not talking about a carbon fiber road bike where you're sitting on something that feels like a brick. And
yeah, it's good, and I really like it. I've noticed it's, I mean, just incredibly affordably priced. So that was kind of why I went for it, to get back into cycling after years of kind of just being off the road. And so I kind of wanted to go that way, and I love it. I mean, people say, I remember reading, oh, this bike is a stiff ride, you know, like before I ordered it, and I got on it, and I really didn't feel that way. Like when I was, you know, actually cruising, I might go up a gear size so I can kind of keep up on, you know, streets a little bit better, but yeah. So that's what I'm riding now.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on it. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to Jordan for his time. I'm a huge fan of his work, so to have him kick off this segment was a true honor. Up next is Reg Mullet, who captured the Guinness record for most vertical feet descended in 24 hours. Pretty cool chat. But for now, here is Jordan Ruiz with Montana.
I am aching to be alone. I am hungry for white open. The air gets clearer the higher you are, where the lights don't choke out the stars. time.